Our Old Testament lesson this morning is a very familiar one. When I've read the first three or four words, you'll be able to tell the story yourself. But I would urge you to listen closely, because every time we hear a familiar story, no matter how familiar, something new lights up in our mind and tells us there's a new lesson to learn from that story. So listen closely as I read from 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 38 through 50. Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a bronze helmet on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. David strapped Saul's sword over the armor, and he tried in vain to walk, for he was not used to them. Then David said to Saul, "I cannot walk with these, for I am not used to them." So David removed them. Then he took his staff in his hand and chose five smooth stones from the wadi and put them in his shepherd's bag in the pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. The Philistine came on and drew near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the wild animals of the field." But David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This very day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the Philistine army this very day to the birds of the air and to the wild animals of the earth, so that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and all this assembly may know that the Lord does not save by sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." When the Philistine drew nearer to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, slung it, and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, striking down the Philistine and killing him. There was no sword in David's hand. This is the word of the Lord. Our first lesson from the New Testament comes from the very beginning of the 12th chapter of the book of Hebrews. This is a very brief reading and probably needs some emphasis. I would suggest that sometime when you are home in a peaceful moment, read chapter 11, the chapter that precedes this reading. It defines faith and goes through a litany of people in the Bible who lived by faith. And then also read the whole of chapter 12, for it gives some guidance on how we can live by faith. Reading now from chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings to so closely, and let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the sake of the joy that was set before him endured the cross and disregarding its shame and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such hostility against himself from sinners, so that you may not grow weary or lose heart." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Our gospel lesson comes from John 14, verses 15 through 17, and then 25 through 27. These are the words of Jesus to his disciples the night before he was crucified. "If you love me, you will keep my commandments, and I will ask the Father, and the Father and he will give you another advocate to be with you forever. This is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know him because he abides with you and he will be in you. I have said these things to you while I am still with you, but the Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you everything and remind you of all that I have said to you. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not let them be afraid. This is the word of the Lord. I have a confession to make. I like the Marvel movies. The Avengers, Captain America, Iron Man, Spider-Man, all those heroes. My whole family loves them. In fact, I watched one of them last night. We like the heroes, I believe. These are classic action-adventure films. Have basically the same plot line as all the others. You know, there's a crisis that arises. There's a hero that steps up, takes care of the problem, and fixes it. And it's not just the action-adventure movies that has this. Many of our books, TV shows, all of these have this basic hero narrative of a crisis coming, someone stepping up and solving the problem. And another confession I would have is that I sometimes daydream of being a hero. When I was taking karate, I would think of coming up against some bad guys and taking care of them, taking them out, you know, being that hero. Well, it seems somewhat appropriate on Reformation Sunday to talk about heroes. We remember the heroes of the faith, the Reformation, Martin Luther, John Calvin, to mention just two. But we think of the disciples of Jesus, these 12 men who changed the world. We mentioned Hebrews chapter 11 that we didn't read, which I call the Hall of Fame of Faith of the Old Testament. These people, these heroes of faith that lived out that faith and made change happen in the world. And we're to follow them. Our reading said that we are to consider them and follow after them, follow their example, to overcome obstacles, to keep our eyes focused on Jesus and run that race that's been set before us, so that we are to be heroes like them. When you think about heroes, and you think about social change that happens in our world, we have two narratives, two conflicting narratives that kind of look at this. We have what I would call the hero narrative. This is the one where the crisis comes up, some extraordinary person comes to the deliverance of this crisis to save the world or the community or people, and we lift them high up in adoration. An example of this happened in 2007. Wesley Autry was at a New York City subway stop waiting for the train. He was there with his daughter, and a man had an epileptic seizure and fell onto the tracks. Autry and another man both jumped down to try to get the man up off the tracks. But then they heard a train coming. That other man immediately climbed back onto the platform, leaving Wesley and the man having the seizures on the track. Autry took stock of the situation, knew he couldn't get the man out before the train arrived, but also recognized that there was probably enough space between the bottom of the rail car and the floor that if they were laying down, it would go over them. So he tackles the guy that's having the seizures, lays on top of him as the train goes rushing over them. And neither of them were hurt. By all definitions, this man was a hero. He saved the day. But what he didn't do was bring about any large social change. We admire him. We think, wow, I wish I could be like him. But in our hearts, I think we know, I probably wouldn't have done that if I'd been there. And so the hero narrative, we lift up the hero, but rarely do they get us moving to bring about social change. So then there's the second narrative. This is the movement narrative. And the hero plays a part in the movement narrative, but not the same role. Let me give you an example of this. This one, we go back to 1955 and what we consider the beginning of the civil rights movement. Rosa Parks. This is the story we know. Rosa Parks is sitting on the bus, and the law said if there were no other seats, a white person could have that seat. Not only that seat, but the seat next to it, and the two seats on the other side of the aisle. So it wasn't just one seat, it was four seats. And he asked her to move, and she refused. And the way we normally tell the story was this old African-American woman who was tired after a hard day's work just suddenly decided, I'm not getting up. But that's not really the story. The story is, she's not old. I think she was 45 or 43. She was not an old woman. And it was not a spur-of-the-moment decision. And although we claim that it is the start of the civil rights movement, it really wasn't. For 12 years, she'd been the secretary of the local NAACP chapter. She was also part of a woman's political council. She had gone to Tennessee for 10 days of intense training on civil rights activism. When that day came, she was ready. And it wasn't a spur-of-the-moment decision. It had come after years of training. And what it did was it brought the spotlight onto the civil rights movement. And it inspired other people to action because following her refusing to give up her seat and her being arrested, the African Americans of Montgomery, Alabama, began a year-long boycott of the buses. And this changed a nation. It was a movement that began by individuals joining in together, taking small steps and saying, we can make a difference. Now, the different ways you prepare for being a hero in these two narratives. In the hero narrative, you stop and consider, can I be a hero? Maybe I could. Yeah, you know, I've got this karate training. Maybe I could be a hero. And then you wait. You wait for the crisis. I'm still waiting. It may or may not ever come. But what about that movement narrative? Here, the way you prepare for that is you join in with another community, people that have the same values, have the same passion, who have the same goal as you have, and you see an issue that needs to be changed. And you say, I'm going to be working toward changing that. And you join with these other people and you begin to study it and find out what are the underlying issues, what needs to happen for something to change. And then you formulate a plan and you begin to take these small steps toward bringing change. And together you begin to this wonderful movement that will bring change. The hero is there as an inspiration. The hero in the movement narrative rarely is the one that fixes the problem. But perhaps it's the one that gets the cycle moving, like Rosa Parks did. We read the story of David, and usually we kind of put him in that first category, the hero narrative. Here's the little bitty old shepherd boy going up against the giant Goliath, the professional soldier. But we don't realize, or we don't remember, what happened before the story. Before David ever started to fight Goliath, he was a shepherd, watching after the family's sheep, becoming an expert with the slingshot, protecting the sheep from the wolves and the lions and the bears. He was also anointed by the prophet Samuel that he would be the next king of Israel. You have to imagine that played a role in his thinking of going up against Goliath. Also, part of that story is that when the king Saul would have his days of dark, deep depression, they would summon David and he would come and play music for the king. Although the king probably rarely, if ever, acknowledged that that was David doing it. And then the final thing, the reward that King Saul offered. Whoever defeats the giant gets to marry my daughter. And I'm sure David's thinking, this is the path to becoming king. I become part of the family. And so he signs up. And we know the story. He rejects the armor because he's not a soldier. He doesn't know how to fight as a soldier. He knows how to defend sheep with a slingshot. And that's what he does to become the hero. And he becomes the people's champion. So much so that Saul comes to despise David and tries over numerous occasions to kill him. But David would not fight back. David goes into hiding. But he's still the champion of the people. And when Saul is defeated and killed in battle, David becomes king. Not because he's in the family. He becomes king because he's the champion of the people. And under his rule, Israel hit its high point, the golden years. But it was a movement that started with David as a hero, but also the people following and making all that happen. Many of the major social changes that have come throughout the history of the world, especially over the last 2,000 years, have originated from the church. Education, hospitals, care for the poor, care for the sick. Many of these things arose out of the church trying to make a difference in its community. People coming together, working together, taking those small steps together and making something happen. Jesus took 12 men, spent 3 years training them, preparing them, and then sends them out to start this movement. Paul went from city to city, starting churches, never staying at a place more than 1 or 2 years, but he would leave behind these disciples of Jesus. And these disciples would begin to make changes within their community in the ways that they lived, in the ways that they followed Jesus and followed his teachings and loved one another as Jesus has commanded us. And it was because of this that they would often become persecuted, but it was also because they stayed faithful and they kept doing these things that Jesus had called them to do, that within a little over 300 years, it became the official religion of the Roman Empire. We are called to be making changes in our community. The 40 days of prayer that we started on Friday, which I didn't mention during the announcements, you can still sign up for. You can receive it by text or email, or you can get a week's worth in the mail, or you can go on our website or on our Facebook page and you can find it. But today, the prayer request is for the future of our church, that God might lead us into the movement we need to be part of, the movement that God wants to do in and through us. So we want to be praying about that. Dorothy Day, the even into the 70s, she was a social activist, a Catholic social worker, a journalist. She said one time, "Don't call me a saint. I don't want to be dismissed that easily." We often put our saints and our heroes on a pedestal so that we can applaud them and say what wonderful people they are, but then not do anything in response. That's not what Jesus calls us to do. Our heroes, we follow them. We are inspired by them, and they help us to move together in making a change. We are called to be disciples of Jesus. And as we live that out, as we work together to bring about that movement narrative, we all become heroes, I believe. So take a moment. Where do you fit in on this? Ask yourself, pray about this as we continue worshiping.